Hey, Soul Tribe. Welcome back. This is episode 1.3 of Beyond Deconstructing. I'm your host, T. Jamaica Polk, affectionately known as Deconstructing Neuro. And in today's episode, I had an opportunity to sit down with Jess Perkins, also known as Jess Diverges. And she is an awesome ADHD coach, bringing the very necessary skills and tools needed for autistic and ADHD people to show up authentically and with confidence in this world. So without further ado, I'm going to flip it over to my time speaking with Jess. Here we go. I am super excited to bring you guys today's guest, Jess Perkins. And as just a little bit of an introduction, Jess is an ADHD coach. And I'm actually just going to turn it over to her because she's going to be able to explain what she does and who she is better than I am. So go ahead, Jess, take it away.
Sure thing. So hi, everyone. My name is Jess. You probably know me as Jess Diverges. I'm on TikTok and Instagram. And like Sierra just said, I am an ADHD coach. I work with ADHD and autistic adults to help them build the confidence that they need in order to advocate for themselves, make their lives work for them, and basically stop taking shit from other people. The reason why I chose confidence is because I feel like ADHDers have such a unique way of looking at the world, and we care so strongly about the things that we do care about. And I would really like to see more of us be able to actually go out in the world and make the changes that we want to see, because we could build a beautiful world if they would just let us.
Oh, preach. I need that printed on a t-shirt, actually. I love that. And that's definitely what drew me to you when your content came across my page. I was like, yeah, definitely. We need this, because a lot of what our representation is from an holistic lens, and the people who try to help us are all coming from an holistic lens. So we're going to dive a little bit into that. But first, I would love to hear a little bit more about your journey when it comes to discovering your neurodivergence.
So I was actually raised to be like a toxic positivity professional. I was like a major internalizer and never wanted to admit that I was struggling with anything for pretty much my entire life. When I finally did wind up going to counseling was when I was in college at like age 26. And the problems that I brought to my therapist were things about like having trouble making friends or keeping friends, always being worried about the things that I was saying, feeling like everyone sort of hates me all of the time. And she kind of unofficially diagnosed me with social anxiety. And I kind of rode with that a little bit, even though I felt like it didn't really fully explain who I was as a person. And another thing too is I would always blame sort of my mental health struggles on having been in an emotionally abusive relationship for 5 years. From when I was like 16 to 21, I was with this terrible person who did a lot of awful things to me. And so I just would kind of attribute it to trauma from that, as opposed to like looking a little bit deeper into it. And then in the beginning of 2020, the pandemic hit and everything came to a halt. And like a lot of us, I just like lost all of the momentum that had been like carrying me through and like sort of enabling me to give this image of this like productive member of society. And I just like fell into this deep, what I now know is a burnout, but I thought it was just depression. And I just like had no energy to do anything anymore, was like not excited about anything. Until finally in the summer of 2021, I went on TikTok, and within a few weeks, the algorithm had nailed me down. I kept seeing a bunch of ADHD videos, and I self-diagnosed with ADHD first. And at the time, I was also seeing a lot of misinformation about how ADHD and autism are so similar. And so I would attribute like most of my autistic traits to just being ADHD, until finally I realized actually the two conditions are pretty different. And a couple of months later, realized that I was autistic, which during my self-diagnosis journey was also when I was just starting graduate school. And so I was so busy trying to keep up with my classes and all of this work to do, plus trying to figure my own self out. I didn't really have time to really sit down and look at it. And eventually in February, I wound up like just completely dropping out of graduate school because of all the I couldn't do it anymore, basically. Mm-hmm. And decided to turn around and start my own life coaching business because I was struggling so hard to find resources for autistic and ADHD adults. Everything I found was just like directed towards children. And so I figured, you know, if no one's doing this, I might as well do it myself. And so now here I am.
That's awesome. Well, firstly, thank you so much for walking us through a little bit of your journey. I relate to it heavily. I know we spoke previously, and I think that's a common theme. A lot of us being able to use that downtime and that reset of the pandemic to be able to be even more introspective than we are more inclined, already naturally inclined to be, and really fit those puzzle pieces together. And then there's tools like TikTok that makes you, you know, as frustrating as it can be, it brings people together to validate you and realize that your experience isn't unique. Like, as much as I'm sure you felt this way before, it's like, I feel like this is only happening to me. But once you get online and you see that, like, this experience is happening to other people, it's really important to build on that community. And I actually am so happy that you have touched on the sad reality of the fact that there are no resources for autistic adults. There are hardly any physicians that even assess adults for autism. And then even if you can get an assessment at this point, once you do, what is there out there afterwards? There's no real resources. It's not treated like other disabilities where people are a little bit more inclined to provide you with accommodations. You have to accommodate yourself. So I really love what you're doing. I think it's very, very needed. And I would love to hear a little bit more about your vision when it comes to coaching and that confidence and why it's so important and why we need that presence.
Yeah. So basically my goal with coaching, as I said, is to kind of give ADHDers the confidence to be able to advocate for themselves and put those accommodations in place that we frankly kind of need to do on our own because no one else is going to do it for us, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that I chose confidence specifically is because I've actually been on my own very intentional self-love healing journey for the last 10 years. Since I left my abuser, I was very focused on self-love and just being confident and validating myself and basically just not putting up with bullshit from anyone. A long time ago decided to, for example, stop putting energy into people who I would have to fight for them to pay attention to me or accept me who I was as a person. If somebody told me that they didn't like something I was doing, I said, okay, bye then. And I would just walk away. So I pretty much had that down. For a while, and then I feel realizing I was ADHD and autistic was just that last nail in the coffin, so to speak, of oh, okay, this is the one thing that I was missing, you know. Mm-hmm. And being able to sort of understand my brain a little bit better through the lens of knowing that I'm neurodivergent just gave me that extra information I needed to fully accept myself, basically, because it's hard to practice radical self-acceptance when you don't realize what you're trying to accept in yourself. Does that make sense? And yeah. So finally, you know, the things I would call myself lazy all of the time and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be able to understand why I couldn't do things as easily as other people. It's not because I'm broken or weird or whatever. It's just because I'm autistic. And that mm-hmm. one thing is just so helpful in all of the other things that go behind confidence.
Absolutely. And I hate using this analogy just because of how polarizing certain things are, but it's the missing puzzle piece for a lot of us. You know, yeah. For me, it was the same thing. It's I always felt I was weird. I always felt there were so many things, especially socially, that just never fit for me. And once I was able to label it and give it a name and understand it intellectually, how I could do everything, how I've learned to understand everything, it really just unlocked and made sense. It nothing else makes sense. It makes the most sense. And it also empowered me to feel confident enough to start this, you know, these conversations online and use this platform. So, I totally, again, I keep saying, I love that what you're doing, also because a lot of us, when we suffer from like trauma and our trauma response tends to be like fawning or people pleasing, we become very easily malleable. You know, it's easy to manipulate us in a lot of ways because we're just in like autopilot. We're just like, you know, I have to be, this is how I get acceptance. Even a lot of this is subconscious, but we learn through conditioning that I gain acceptance by being the least intrusive and the most helpful. And because of that, we don't advocate for ourselves and we don't say when things make us uncomfortable. A lot of times, I know in my situation, I dissociated and I didn't even feel these things until they overwhelmed me to the point that I couldn't ignore it anymore. And I was just like, I have to be nice. And that's so many people in our position when they're still asleep, I say, or still subconscious or unconscious of what's going on, not even realizing that that's what's going on. So we definitely do need that kind of confidence, like to know, like, look, this is who you are. There's nothing wrong with who you are. And not only is there nothing wrong with who you are, but given the proper accommodations and given the proper skills, you can thrive and not just like fight to try to survive in this world.
Right, exactly. Yeah, getting us from surviving to thriving was another reason why I wanted to dive into coaching, because I was in graduate school to be a therapist, and I just kind of felt like something was missing in a lot of my clinical classes. It was a lot of like CBT based type stuff, like, oh, you know, the problems you're seeing aren't really there, you know, no one actually hates you, you're not annoying, you know, all of that stuff. And I never
gaslighting, basically.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Basically teaching you how to gaslight yourself, which isn't really helpful when, you know, you grew up being a people pleaser and that, you know, fawn response state. You know, I call myself like a professional toxic positivity professional, because I got so good at just like ignoring any struggles or any problems, because like exactly what you said, that's just how we're taught growing up. You know, we have these needs, especially being undiagnosed, that people don't really realize is there, and so we wind up being emotionally neglected without anyone fully realizing that's what's going on. And because you're a child, you know, you don't understand that it's, you know, you don't understand that it's not you, basically. You internalize right. that as something's wrong with me, not something's wrong with this situation. And so you just learn to just be quiet, sit down, stay out of the way, unless you're helping somebody else, in which case definitely help as much as you possibly can, overwork yourself into burnout. Mm-hmm. I was definitely the golden child of my family as well. Like I was put into that role of like everyone else who was older than me had all of these issues. And I was born and I was pretty and intelligent. I taught myself how to read when I was 1 year, like 2 years old. So I was super mm-hmm. convenient. And so I just got kind of placed in this just this golden child role of like, there's Jess. She's here. She's the one that's not going to cause any problems. She's the one that's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
And so now all of my self-worth has been tied. I'm slowly but surely dismantling it. But all of my self-worth was just tied to like how much I could do for other people. And mm-hmm. I never took the time to ask myself what I wanted or how I felt about literally anything until like the past year or so.
Oh my goodness. That is so relatable. I don't know if I would call it golden child, maybe, because like I'm the middle child. And I've always been like the voice of reason, but I never caused any like behavioral issues when I was a child. I would see how like my older sister would act out sometimes, or my younger brother would just like be able to do whatever he wanted and not really, you know, get disciplined. And it would make me frustrated. But then I also was like, you know what? I see how frustrated my parents are. I'm going to be the good girl. I'm going to be the one that doesn't cause them any trouble. But what I'm realizing now that I'm healing, part of the reason why I was so frustrated with my sister, at least, was because she advocated for herself. Whether it came out as like, you know, her being an angry teen or not, she expressed when she didn't feel like she was being treated well. And she fought for herself. And she was not afraid to say anything. Now, granted, it didn't get received well by the adults. But I'm realizing in retrospect, it was because she had the audacity to point out what was wrong and advocate for herself. And that's why she got in trouble. And so I conversely learned, oh, I will not get in trouble if I don't advocate for myself. But internally, I saw what she was doing, and my child, not even inner child at that point, but became my inner child, was jealous of my sister's ability to advocate for herself in the moment. And it's crazy when that was like a really big realization for me, in part, and a big part of my healing journey is like, I'm not wrong for saying that something doesn't feel good to me. It's okay to say that you're not treating me right, or I need something that you're not providing, and this is why. It's okay to advocate for yourself. You're not a burden. And if someone makes you feel like a burden for that, then that just lets you know that they're not your tribe.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Things that I have to remind myself of every day. Like, you're not a burden. It's okay to take up space. It's okay to let someone know that you're uncomfortable with something. Like, it's fine. And like, in order to like get over that like internalization of just like decades of basically ignoring yourself, it's so hard to finally get over that hump of like, no, I'm allowed to exist as I am. I, you know, can ask for accommodations. And if anybody else has a problem with that, that's not somebody that I need to be spending my energy on. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of goes into that area of like, well, okay, if, you know, I drop all of the people who I feel like I have to work for my relationship for, who treat me like I'm a burden, then I'm going to have nobody left. That's sometimes the case, unfortunately. And like, nobody deserves to be alone, but I was alone for like a few years. There was a span where I just like really didn't have any real life friends or anything like that. I was living by myself, would go to work and come home. Mm-hmm. And it would definitely get to me at times, the loneliness. I would just kind of like break down about it. But in retrospect, that was also the time that I really got to learn about myself. I got to learn about things that I liked. And you know, eventually, once you start putting that energy out into the world of like, this is who I am, and you can either take it or leave it, you will start attracting people who see you for who you are and who you do not have to work for that relationship with. And then when you finally find those people, whether they're on the internet or whether you're lucky enough to find them in real life, mm-hmm. you'll look back on all those people who you thought were your friends and who you were so sad to see leave, and you'll go, wow, that was really a waste of my time. Basically, I can't believe I ever pined after those people when there are so many other more wonderful people in the world who are more amazing than I ever would have thought was possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so funny because I hate that I like tend to bring up TikTok a lot, but it's like a main part of my life at this point because kind of like you, like I've been in my hermit mode. Like, the more I'm healing, the less I can tolerate being around most people. And that yeah. sounds kind of fucked up, but it's the truth, you know, because you realize just how incompatible a lot of like my values are with like other people or whatnot. But you know, because of that, I've been on TikTok a lot more, and it's just actually been really reaffirming because this is the first time, or like the first kind of platform, in my opinion, where like you can literally just get in front of your phone and express your opinion in the moment. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It doesn't have to be like, I mean, some people do these well thought out, and sometimes I do well thought out as I grew. But in the beginning, I just got on there to have a place to vent about my lived experience as an actually autistic person. And in that moment, or in those first few moments, I was able to connect with so many different people who saw my little rant and saw themselves in me. And then it connected me to this great community where I met people like you and other content creators. And I'm just like, wow, not only do we have these on the surface, very different lives, but underneath it all, we're all kind of the same, and we're all having those same kind of experiences. And Why is it that people don't see us when they talk about autism? Why is it that they still see a certain face? Why isn't it that they don't see the women who are like high achievers and like are always, you know, doing things for other people? Why don't they see us as autistic? That's why we need to have these kind of conversations to like show our lived experience and what it's like being actually autistic people. And that's another reason why I'm glad that you are autistic and are an autism coach or a coach for confidence for autistic and ADHDers, because going back to what I was saying earlier, most of what we know about autism is from an holistic lens. Like it's seen from the people on the outside and how they interpret us, but nothing can supersede lived experience. You can't, like, as much as you can study about, like I can study about ancient Chinese mythology or whatever, or I don't know, that's a bad example. Or I can study yoga. I can go to India. I can study with yogis. I can do all of the culturally respectable, like not try to appropriate or anything like that. I can study for years and years and years. And I still won't intrinsically understand it the way that people who grew up and live and breathe and have experienced the life of being a yogi their entire lives. I will never be able to understand it on their level. And that's my terrible analogy or way of trying to like describe why it's so important that actually autistic people have not only a seat at the table, but are at the head of the table when it comes to discussing how we view autism, how we treat autism, what resources and accommodations need to be in place for autism. So I'm going to keep hyping you up because I love that. I'm so excited for your coaching. And like, I learned just from the post that you post on Instagram as well. Like I try to repost it whenever they come across my feed, because I'm like, this is great information. Like this is stuff that I had to figure out over my own journey. But like, if somebody had given me a tool in the beginning, it may have made things like at least the transition and the awakening part a little bit easier, and I wouldn't have had to go through it alone.
Yeah, exactly. It actually, it makes me feel so good to hear you say that, because I'm so hard on myself with my content, and I'm always worried of like, is this going to make sense? Like, is this actually going to help people? You know, all of this stuff. So it's always wonderful to hear that my content is actually being helpful towards other people.
Absolutely.
And yeah, that's exactly the goal of, you know, what I'm doing here is I'm trying to give the information to people that I wish I had, you know, 10 years ago, or like even as a child, you know, just knowing that like, you're allowed to take up space. You're not a burden to anyone. You can advocate for yourself. Like it's okay to like ask for things. It's okay to, you know, exist in the world as you are, and like giving people these tools to be able to, especially to be able to put words to the things that are going on inside of your brain, I think is so helpful. Even if there's not necessarily a solution, if you, for example, know that you have like executive dysfunction instead of you're just lazy, then that judgment and that shame just kind of like is able to drip off of you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a little bit easier to find, you know, ways to accommodate yourself when you're not, you know, just shaming yourself all day, every day, because somebody who does that actively still, nobody should be, you know, shaming themselves for existing.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. This is something that I like to call the why behind the what. Even though you understand you have executive dysfunction, it's not going to make you this all of a sudden person that's able to follow a schedule. But what, or, you know, this pristine schedule that maybe an holistic or a neurotypical person could, but once you do get rid of that shame and the guilt, a lot of that is what holds us back too, or what keeps us from seeing, you know, the things that we do. So I'll give you an example. So lately I've been building my own schedule because I haven't been at work. And so the control of my day is completely up to me. And so in the beginning, I did have some of those returning thoughts of like, oh my God, I'm being lazy. I didn't get up until this, or I didn't do this because I have all of these things to do, but I didn't get all of these things done. And then I shifted my view and I was like, okay, let me look at what I did do. What did I accomplish today? Okay, so no, I didn't get 10 things done, but I got 4 things done, and that's something. And I could have gotten nothing done. Because there have been days where I'm just sitting there beating myself up so much that I can't figure out where to start. So I just don't. And I'm like, well, at least today I got 4 things done. And that's 4 less things that I have to do. And maybe tomorrow I'll get another 4 done. And then 2. And then I'll have a free day where I can loaf and feel completely okay that I didn't do anything today. And that also, that kind of ties into, like, I think breaking down societal expectations as well, because living in this society, we have this idea of what productivity is and what a lazy person is. And it's like, I don't want my life and my existence defined externally, if that makes sense. It's like, I just want to do. Like, yes, there are things that I have to do. Obviously, I have to keep a roof over my head. I have responsibilities, the musts. I'm okay with the musts. It's the shoulds that I want to get rid of and get away from.
Yes, exactly. That word should. Oh, if I could burn that word and throw it away in the garbage forever, I totally would. That's been like one of the major changes in the way that I think is, like, anytime I find myself saying I should blah blah blah, I go, hold on. Why? What's this word should? What are you trying to do here? Don't use that. Like, you know, I can't think of any examples right now, but like, yeah, finding that why when you're like, well, I should be doing this, or I should have, you know, done all of these things, and like, I didn't do it because I'm lazy. Well, no, you probably didn't do it because either you don't have as much energy, you know, today as you might have on another day, or there's something else that's kind of standing in your way. Maybe there's too many steps. But yeah, shaming yourself is. That's another thing I wish I could throw in the fire, honestly, shame, because it's just such. Yeah, I'm going to call it an unnecessary emotion, because it's actually a secondary emotion. You know, we're not born being able to feel shame. We're taught shame by society. And, you know, the only thing it does is make you feel bad about yourself. And like, even the argument of like, well, we need some shame in society. Otherwise, you know, people would just going around being a dick all the time. Well, I can know how to treat somebody else with respect and not be an asshole to them without shaming myself about it. Like, I'm, you know, a member of society because I care about other people and I want to be nice to other people. I don't want to be an asshole. If you do, that's your prerogative. But I don't need to be, you know, shamed in order to not be a dick, basically.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. If we led with, like, there are, like, positive emotions and necessary emotions that can lead to the same result. So instead of using shame, fear, and guilt, which are the 3 biggest motivators that our society uses to keep people in line, if we led with like love and concern and compassion, that would get across the same thing. So for example, like if you think about how like a lot of people discipline their children, they'll shame them. Like, how dare you do something like that? Why would you do something like that? If you would just take the time to show them compassion, and this works with autistic and autistic children as well. If the gentle parenting thing, like sitting down and meeting them where they are and explaining to them the why behind the what, hey, this is unacceptable and here's why. We have to be kind to other people. You can't hit them, because would you like to be hit? No, you wouldn't. We have to see things from their perspective, honey. This is why you can't hit them. This is why it's unacceptable that you hit them, as opposed to how dare you hit them? What are you doing? Get over here. You're being a mess. Like, you know, that and shaming them and publicly scolding them, beating them. Those things are normalized and it's just seen as like, well, this is how you got to get them to learn. But when you, again, get to the why behind the why behind that what or that kind of behavior is compliance. It's not actually learning how to be emotionally available or emotionally mature. It's a very emotionally immature response to something natural, which is a child trying to express their needs without knowing how to do it in a healthy way until it's modeled by someone else. But unfortunately, most people don't know how to do it for themselves. So then it's like a vicious cycle.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we as a society have been just like so afraid of talking about, you know, mental health and just like being compassionate, how to actually like process emotions instead of shaming them and like shoving them down into this box for them to stay until they boil up and explode eventually, because they always do. And like what you're saying about you can explain to children like the logical reasons of why they shouldn't do a behavior. I completely agree with that. Like 100%. We need to be giving children a lot more credit than we do. Like, they are tiny human beings and they are capable of understanding things. If you just take the time to have a conversation with them about like, okay, I told you not to do this and here's why, rather than don't do this because I'm the grown up and I said so. Because then yes, all they're going to learn is just compliance and respect for authority, which means they're going to grow up into adults who are just like husks of people who don't really do anything except what they're told. And the people who are in the positions that are telling the people what to do are not people who should be in charge of anything. So do we really want to raise people who are just going to continue to obey authority just for the only reason that they are in a position of authority? Or do we want to raise people to question things and be critical and advocate for themselves and actually be able to process their emotions and react in, I hesitate to say healthy ways, but like react in ways that match their values as a person,
yeah,
essentially, rather than just like reacting based on whatever trauma response or shame response they were taught as a child.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that it's an overall symptom of our society. And you hit on something very, very pertinent to the conversation, that the people in charge shouldn't be in charge. But the reason why they're in charge is because we have the system the way it is. People don't question authority. People don't question what comes from someone who is supposedly in a position above them. And because of that, when you have someone like us who usually like, I know I can speak for myself. I just was very ignorant to the social hierarchy. I didn't realize what was going on because I see people as people. I don't look at someone. I don't look at their title. I don't look at their perceived like position and think, oh, they're special because of this. I meet you. It's a blank slate. You're a person. I'm a person. If we vibe, we vibe. If we don't, we don't. And I really don't care where you fall. I'm going to treat everyone the same. And then I am genuinely like a kind person. So like, I'm going to try to help out. If I think we click, I'm really going to try to help you out. Right. But like, realizing that like most people are like, I kind of liken it to like the Matrix. They're still plugged into the Matrix, but they don't realize it. It's like all prescribed for them and they're just playing their part. But you stick out like a glitch when you don't play your role, because it's like, whoa, hold on, no. I know how this is supposed to go and you're not fitting in here. What's going on? And then they kind of like send the Agent Smith to attack you and try to boot you out of the system. And I feel like now there's so many of us, it's not just the one, it's the generation of the awakening neurodivergence that are like fighting back to like wake people up and be like, look, you guys, this is what you've been asleep to. This is so normal to you guys, but we're trying to tell you, like, we're not crazy. We see what's going on and we want to wake you up. We don't want to change you. We just want to make you aware of what's been going on. At least that's how I feel. Like, that's why I call it deconstructing neurodivergence, is because, like, it's a construct. It's all a construct. It's not real. These are rules that don't make any sense. They're all arbitrary. You guys don't even realize consciously that you're doing this. I had to figure it out by observing and making the pattern make sense, that this is what you guys do and this is what you value. And if you could understand why that actually is counterproductive to what's intrinsically good to human nature, you could just wake up to that. I think we'd be in a better place.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And it's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? Is because neurodivergent people, like especially autistic people and, you know, ADHDers too, we are the ones who like see the problems in society. We're the ones going, hey, you guys know that like this is ridiculous, right? Like y'all are dancing and this is kind of silly. And here's like a way more efficient and productive way we could do this. Do y'all want to do this instead? No? All right, that's fine. like if more of us were to speak out about it, because I know I've had conversations with people too where I'll point something out and they'll go, oh wow, actually you're right, this is kind of silly that we do this, why do we do this, you know? Mm-hmm. But we're the only ones who like maybe they see it but they just like choose to ignore it for whatever reason, but we see it and we're like, hey, that's a problem, let's fix it. Like I feel like that's like a few weeks ago I went to this presentation with Ariane Photo. I don't know if you know them, but it was about like basically the purpose of neurodiversity in society. Mm-hmm. And that was essentially their point, is that we are the problem seers, we are the problem solvers, we are the ones who understand the systems because we have systems-based thinking and we have, you know, the processing that we need to be able to really see this big picture and find the holes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, figure out the things that we're doing that maybe aren't so great and find better ways for everyone. Because there's also that like very strong sense of justice that a lot of us have. Like we are all like very much egalitarians. We want everyone to, you know, be treated, you know, the same, be seen the same in society, you know, be given the same chances. Mm-hmm. And it's just not happening. And we seem to be the only ones who care about it enough to do something about it.
Absolutely. And it's because this system is a hierarchical one, right? So anybody that benefits from it is not going to find any reason to question it, because why would you? Like you're winning. You're on the winning team. So why would you care about it? And then if you've bought into it, which, you know, I mean, being born in this country, like before I started to wake up, I was a part of it too. Like I thought, you know, yeah, I need to do this and I have to have these certain statuses and I have to do X, Y, and Z and get a good job. And this kind of job is more respectable than this job. A corporate job is more respectable than doing gigs and X, Y, and Z. But once you realize that all of that really doesn't make any sense and it's all arbitrary and it's hard to operate within that after you realize that, like, oh, wow, I'm like literally selling my life for something that doesn't really make sense. And like the people around me, I'm sure if you took 2 seconds to think about it, you aren't actually happy doing this stuff. But because it makes you look a certain way in this society, I'm finding that a lot of neurotypical or holistic people, they must have a switch in their brain or something off where they can ignore the fact that they are being inauthentic to themselves or their true selves every single day. Because I had to have a switch. It was called dissociation. That helped me. That helped me do that for a while. Mm-hmm. But once I stopped dissociating and I realized, no, this actually doesn't make me happy. This brings me a lot of stress. And what makes me happy is like doing things that like help other people in genuine ways and doesn't do harm and is like kind of minimalist. Like I don't need a big old house and like several cars and like all this stuff. I really just need a nice little home and, you know, community of people who are genuine and, you know, my basic needs met. And if I could see other people around the world and visit other people and visit their cultures, that would be a bonus. But my basic necessities and just like some people that get it, that's all I really need. I don't need all this big stuff. But a lot of us are still trapped by the idea of what we're supposed to do. Going back to that should. I should have this. I should do this. I should do this. And for a lot of us, especially if you're autistic, it's like we're all going to hit a wall in this society if we keep trying to live up to the shoulds.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of buzz lately about how like there's something brewing in society. Like so many people are waking up to this kind of thing anymore. And like a lot of people went through a big transformation because of the pandemic, because, you know, basically the entire world had to like stop and like take a look at ourselves. And I completely forgot where I was going with this sentence.
I hate when that happens. It's all right, girly.
Dang, it like completely escaped me.
What were we talking about? I was saying, dang, I forgot what I was just talking about too.
Saying about like only needing like small things and like not living up to what society teaches us.
Yes, and then you started bringing up the pandemic and the reset.
Yes. I feel like, something's going to break soon in society. That's where I was going. Yeah, it's going to break.
That was a genuine ADHD moment, you guys.
There it is, right here, authenticity. But yes, it was because you were saying that the shoulds are going to break down society, basically. Yes, I completely agree. Something's got to bust soon. We are in late stage capitalism, and we are just slowly, the Ouroboros is getting smaller and smaller every single day. And I definitely think that something's going to break soon. And if we can accelerate that, then hell yeah. Let's break it down.
Exactly, because it's not working for anyone, but we have the ability, or we people like us, because I feel like it's just because of the connectivity and the modern technology, we're able to be in more community. But I'm sure we're not the first generation of people to have neurodivergent people who have put these pieces together. We're just kind of the first to be able to readily share this experience with each other. This is something that is harming all of us, but we've been the ones shouting it from the rooftops for the last few decades, and now we're getting people to be like, oh, okay, I see it. Now, one thing I would say is, this is another reason why I am so passionate about reframing how we see neurodivergence, is because a lot of people still dismiss us. We reaffirm each other in our spaces, but we see once one of our videos hits non-autistic TikTok, what holistic people and neurotypical people still think of us. And so that's why when you see the radical people out there, or the people who are called radical, who are out there fighting for progressive and equality or equitable policies and things like that, they're still called crazy, because it's what they believe diverges from what is normal. And I have a strong sense that most of the social justice warriors are neuro-spicy folks as well, wherever they fall in that realm. But I say all that to say, we still have an uphill battle, and it does start with us redefining what autism is, what it looks like, what we're actually capable of doing, and all of the benefits. Because if I feel if people could understand our processing power and our pattern recognition and our problem-solving abilities and how efficient we are. And not to generalize, because obviously autism is a spectrum, but I'm talking about more so a common theme amongst us who don't have comorbid intellectual disabilities, right? There's a common theme of us just being pattern recognition machines. Erica Heidewald, she calls it her computer brain, and I love it. I'm like, yes, it's definitely a freaking computer brain, because it's whether we have different ways of getting that data together, at some point we have that spider web connectivity type thing, and it's a natural thing. And then once we, with learning confidence and things like that, learn how to hone it and train it, that could legit be a superpower. I've had people ask me before how I came up with something really quickly, and I would just be like, oh, I don't know, I just thought of it. But I know it's because you gave me some data points and I quickly was able to mash it together into something clever. But it amazes people. But to me, I'm just like, yeah, it made sense. You said this, mix it all together and you got this. But again, because they don't see us as assets, they see us as deficits. I think it's really important that we really reframe how people see us. And then once they can understand that, no, they're giving solutions that will work. They're not these crazy out of left field things. We just don't have the capacity to see like they did. So maybe if we tried a little bit, we could do X, Y, and Z. I don't know. Maybe that's my naivete, still thinking that we can make some changes.
I mean, I completely and totally agree. And, a part of having neurodivergent people be more generally accepted in society is doing exactly what you and I are doing, showing up as we are, talking about our own personal experiences. And yeah, I definitely agree. It's not going to happen overnight. Nothing does. But if, more and more of us are able to show our authentic selves and sort of broaden the idea of what autism looks like in society, because right now it's just this shallow, it's gotten a little bit better in the last 10 years or so, but it's still, just this shallow, pathologized deficit base of what autism is, when in reality, it's, so much more than what they're taught. And we can be extremely good assets to society if, you know, like I was saying before, if they would just let us, if they would just realize that, you know, we're not, because like, I feel like the idea of autism is you're either like Sheldon Cooper or you're Arnie Grape.
Right.
And like, if you're not, you know, one of those two caricatures of autism, then you're just like a weirdo, or you're just quirky, or, you know, you're just like mentally ill or whatever. We're just like thrown off to the side. But if society were to like open their eyes and realize that our deficits are actually just differences, like, yeah, they are disabling in the society. I'm not going to deny that for one second, but we can bring so many good things to the world with our beautiful brains and the way they work. Because I completely agree. Like, I love talking to autistic people. I love hearing us info dump about like literally anything, even if it's something I've never heard of, because like, when an autistic person understands something, they understand it so deeply, and they can see it in ways that are so different from anything I've ever encountered before. And I just think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's totally beautiful. And I'm glad you hit on something that sparks a thought in my mind when you said it's deficits based, the way autism is still defined. That's a perfect, like, it's a perfect way to see the difference in how we think and how neurotypical people think. A lot of what they do is actually very negative. It's antithetical to what is like positive or like feels intrinsically good. So they look at everything about autism and they define it by the way it differs or differs from them, diverges, and they call it a deficit. Meanwhile, we not only see, we see our deficits, but we also see our positives the same way that we can see a lot of their deficits, but we can also see some of the positive things about neurotypical communication. So one thing I always harp on is like, I hate very like coded messages. I really do. But there is something beautiful about having like an intrinsic kind of like, way of communicating and like this back and forth dance. Now, I don't think it should be predicated on being mean or being like passive aggressive, but like just having, it's kind of like when you have a best friend and you guys have your own kind of like inside jokes, and there's this like language that you guys speak with each other that's just intrinsic. That's kind of how neurotypical people communicate. They learn their social rules through osmosis, whereas we've had to learn them through observation. There is something beautiful about that natural kind of dance. So they have stuff to teach us about being in community, but we have a lot to teach them about being in community and how to communicate as well. We see the deficits and the benefits, whereas they just define everything by how it differs from what is deemed correct. And that's a perfect example of how narrow their point of view is and how expansive ours is, and why we need to really have a voice in the conversation, not just when it comes to neurodivergence, but like we were saying, society as a whole. But I think it starts with us redefining what neurodivergence looks like, especially in women, especially in adults, because like you were saying, it's either Sheldon Cooper or Wes Eaton Gilbert Grape. And it's like, those two things, when that is the face or how we see autism, it harms everyone, even those who fit the stereotype, because then they are just put in this box and they're not seen as these whole 3D people. They're just seen as the caricature. And then when you don't fit into that, you're not seen as autistic. When you are, I hate this, high functioning, or, you know, formerly known as Asperger's, we're not calling that anymore. But you know what I mean? Like female autism, any of the things that have been used to define people like us who are like, who skated by for so long without realizing what it was. When we continue to look at autism in this one-dimensional way, it harms so many people because it leaves out the real faces of autism, which are you and me, which is, you know, any. I feel like, and I don't have the numbers right now in front of me, but there are gotta be way more neural spicy people out there than we realize. And the fact that it's not adequately portrayed in media, not adequately studied in the mental health field, is keeping so many people undiagnosed and unhappy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I am also interested. This is something I think about a lot in the actual like numbers of neurodivergent people out there, because I think the actual statistics right now is like 5% of people, 2 to 5% of people are autistic or something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's so much more, because especially in like the last few years on, you know, TikTok, you know, the autism trend, you know, whatever. There are so many of us, especially, you know, women and AFAB people, people of color, realizing that they're autistic all mm-hmm. of a sudden. So how many of us really are there? And, you know, how many neurotypical people really are there? But, exactly. you know, it's impossible to find those numbers right now because neurodiversity is just not understood. Like, I think about a lot is the fact that I have a whole degree in psychology, bachelor's, and I even did a stint as a teacher's aide in an autism classroom. And I had so little understanding of autism until I went on TikTok and heard actually autistic adults talking about their personal experiences of what it's like being autistic, the way they do things, why they do things. Mm-hmm. And like, I've learned more from TikTok than I learned in the entire 4 years I was studying psychology in school. That is absolutely nuts to me.
You're absolutely right, girl. I'm in my last semester and a half of my degree in applied psychology, and you're exactly right. We have, in developmental psychology, we might have touched on autism like once, and I did my capstone paper on autism because I wanted to have an opportunity to research it more, but it was nothing that was really, really taught. And it's really a shame. It really is a shame because, again, like, I know we're talking in circles, but it's really important. Like, it took me so long to really accept for myself that I'm autistic. Like, it was a thought that I had in my head long before I accepted it. Just because I had a basic understanding of what autism was based on the DSM-5 and me being very literal, I'm like, well, no, some of these things don't make sense. But then once I started to apply context to them, I'm like, oh, actually, I fit all the criteria for the most part, because, you know, I don't have the intellectual deficits, quote unquote. But in some ways, when it comes to like social cues and things like that, all of those fit 100%. And so even when I started to connect those dots, I still was like, okay, so I'm autistic, but I can still do X, Y, and Z. I can still hold a job. I can talk to people. I've made friends, blah, blah, blah. But then I had to keep unpacking those layers and realizing like, this is some internalized ableism that's keeping me from seeing all the ways that I'm like really autistic. Like, you know, I'm like, no, I'm not. And that actually helped me realize that I was like masking, was learning about like how I covered up my actual autistic traits to fit in. So yeah, I wanted to get into like masking and unmasking in this society, like talking about like being openly autistic. That's what it means, is to unmask. So for me, just as a prompt, like, I realized that I was masking once I started to do trauma healing, and I realized that I was dissociating and I was a people pleaser and I was a fawner. And that even though I am a kind person and I genuinely love helping people, I have to have boundaries and I have to help myself first. And that was part of me starting the unmasking process. Now, I don't know about you, but again, I've been kind of a recluse lately. So I realized in a recent conversation that I haven't really put into practice unmasking that much in public yet. I kind of want to hear your take on, or your journey when it comes to masking and unmasking, and what that's kind of been like in this new reframed view of yourself as an autistic person.
So I'm honestly similar to you, and that I've definitely been in hermit land for the last quite a while. I did wind up coming out as autistic to a couple of real life friends of mine, and they were actually super supportive. They said that, yeah, that totally makes sense. And they had actually been like seeing some of my social media stuff, so they kind of already knew. And I remember back in like March, I decided to tell my parents that I thought that I was autistic, and they are kind of having a little bit harder time accepting it My mom, especially, she'll say things like, oh, you know, you're not autistic. You're just smart, or that's just who you are. Or, you know, you don't look autistic, which we all know what that means.
Yeah.
But actually, recently, I did have a small foray back out into the real world. I decided to try and look for a part-time job. And I went to an interview process at a spa near me, which is like probably the one like real life job that I could actually handle because it's in literally a spa environment. And I decided to go into the interview as like as much as my authentic self as possible without disclosing that I was autistic. And I actually wound up not getting the job. But I found that even just like knowing that I was autistic, being aware of the differences in the way that neurotypical people communicate, I was kind of able to adjust the way that I was interacting without necessarily masking. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an interesting experience because I kind of just showed up as myself authentically. And yeah, it went really well. Afterwards, I, you know, looked back on it and sorry, I completely forgot where I was going with the story again. Oh, no.
Okay. Talking about unmasking it was still a good experience even though you didn't get the job.
Yeah. Yeah, the interview was a good experience. I didn't wind up getting the job actually because they like chose not to listen to me when I said I could only work 2 days a week. It was so weird. It was so weird. They like put me on the schedule for like 4 days and there was all back and forth. But anyway, yeah, the interviewing was interesting. But yeah, I haven't really gotten the chance to really unmask in real life yet. Yeah, we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I feel kind of the same way. I'm like, I've been trying recently, like I'll go and so like I need to body double. I realize that's something that I really need. And so because I'm still in school. And I'll go to like a Starbucks and I'll sit there and I get a lot of work done in just like a couple hours. But what usually happens sometimes, like if I like am made up or something like that, people try to talk to me, even though I have these big ass like headphones on. And that's super annoying. If for some reason an holistic or neurotypical person is listening to this and you've gotten this far, please know. Whether the person is neurodivergent or not, I'm quite sure if someone has big ass over the ear headphones on, they most likely don't want to be bothered. But I used to be one of those people where like if someone bothered me in public because I felt like it was my duty to be polite to them, I would let them bother me and I would like entertain them in their conversation. Well, recently, actually just the other day, I was at a Starbucks not too far from me. And it was pretty busy in there for it to be a Monday. I'm saying, wow, it's a lot of people at 2 o'clock at a Starbucks, but okay. And so the only seat that was available was the seat right next to me. And I had these headphones on. I'm sitting there on my computer, like locked in. This guy comes over and I can tell the first question was, is it okay to sit here? Which is fine. You can ask that. I say, yeah, it's fine. He sits down and then I can see out the side of my eye that he's saying something. And so I go, yes, what's going on? He's like, oh yeah, it's crazy that it's raining. I'm like, yeah. And then put my earphone back on and go right back to my computer. Cause I'm like, I need you to I'm not going to entertain this, sir. You see, I'm working. And like, I don't know, some people will say, well, Tierra, this is why you're freaking single. He might've been, look, at this point, I'm not trying to get hit on. I'm trying to work. Like, I'm not here to be seen. I'm here to actually disappear in the crowd so that I can like hyper-focus on my work in front of me. But like, yeah, I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with just being like, yeah, I don't have to entertain you. I don't have to make you feel comfortable because you clearly didn't care about what I was doing or what, you know, I was trying to get accomplished. You just felt like you could impose on my space. So I'm like, no, even though I'm here in public, I'm going to stay in my bubble because that's why I'm here. I'm not here to be bothered by you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's like my most consistent form of kind of unmasking in public. It's like, yeah, now I go out with over the ear headphones on and I'm trying not to feel as awkward when I ignore people, because it's not me ignoring them. It's me being like, hey, I don't want to talk, and I didn't invite you to talk to me. So I don't owe you a conversation.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. And yeah, now that you say that, I realized that, because I was thinking of like instances where I'm like actively like interacting with somebody and on a messaging, being a little bit too literal with the question. But yeah, nowadays, when I go to the grocery store and stuff, like I'll wear, you know, my big like noise canceling headphones, or like sometimes I'll even like bring a fidget with me, or I'll like have my hand sort of like in, you know, in position, as it were, you know, which is something that I, you know, wouldn't do before. I just like didn't let myself do it. I didn't realize this was like something that was comfortable for me. But yeah, small things like that even just like make a huge difference in just like being more comfortable and less shamed in the world. It's just like allowing yourself to kind of just like be that, you know, weird person in the grocery store with your headphones on. It's like, if anyone's looking at me or like judging me for the way that I look, that's their problem. That's their negative energy that they're putting on themselves. I'm just over here trying to get some squeezy applesauce so I can go home and go back to bed.
Why can't we just exist? Like, why? It doesn't have to be this whole game of judgment. I think like that's such a neurotypical thing, because going back to the hierarchy, it's like, I think that's it. There's this constant jockeying to figure out, where does this person lie? What kind of respect should I give them? And just that and the other, that they're constantly judging and looking externally. And we're doing the exact opposite. We're like judging ourselves, or we're course correcting ourselves, and we're realizing things about ourselves, which consequently gives us more grace to give to other people, because we realize how flawed we are. We're not looking at other people like they should be perfect, or that we should look for things that are wrong in them. And so when I go out in public, I don't really care about what's going on around me. Like, I'm aware of it, but I don't really care. I'm not paying attention to it. But I've been told that I am, or like a lot of people read me as arrogant because I'm not paying attention to them. And I'm like, that doesn't make me arrogant. That just makes me not care about what you're doing. Like, you are arrogant. What you're actually telling me is that you're self-centered because you feel like I should be paying attention to you. Like, but I'm just here existing.
Right. Exactly. It's so funny you say that, because I have like such a similar experience, and that I like, there have been so many times where I've been out with somebody and they'll be like, oh my gosh, did you see that person, you know, wearing that weird thing or whatever? And I'll just be like, no. Did you? Like, I just don't pay attention to other people. And even when I do see someone, I'm like, oh, look, a human who is existing. They're not hurting me. Cool. Right. I'm just going to stay over here minding my own business. But, you know, everyone else is looking at, you know, the other people all the time. And then we're like considered arrogant, or like the outsiders, because we're just minding our own business, just like we wish everyone else would.
Exactly. And I think it gets even worse too, when like, because I'm pretty flashy, like, you know, I'm pretty colorful. This is how I like to dress. I don't do it for anyone but me. It's how I like to look. It's what makes me feel happy. And but because what most people, are like what neurotypical people think is normal, is like a performance. Everything you do has to be for a certain end. Oh, if you're this loud and colorful, it means you want attention. And I just want to be left alone. I'm just existing. But if I get attention and I don't react to it the way that they want, it's like, well, you're arrogant again. It's like, oh, well, you're getting all this attention, but you act like you don't care. I'm not acting. I don't care, because I didn't do this to like catch your eye. Like I always say, just because I caught your attention doesn't mean I was trying to capture attention. And I don't owe you this fawning response, or this like, oh, thank you for noticing me. I'd actually wish you'd leave me alone most of the time. Like, it's been like that, at least for me. Like my experience, sometimes I'm like, I feel like people get a lot frustrated with me a lot because I'm not like more grateful for their attention. And I'm like, you actually are like annoying me. I'd want you to leave me alone. I didn't do this for your advantage. I did this because this is how I like to be. It's weird.
It is weird. Everyone seems to take everything so personally all the time. It's like, this is not about you. I'm just wearing this because I want to. Like, that's it. That's it. I'm just here. You're the one who came over to me. So don't, you know, get mad at me because I don't want you to be here.
Exactly. I swear. And we're the ones who get called that, like, so that we're so in our own little world. We're so lost in our own little world. But the crazy thing is, the more lost we get into our own little world, the better we're able to see the world around us. And if holistic people, if neurotypical people did that same thing, if they looked inwardly, they would have a better idea of what's going on around them. But because they don't, they just keep looking for things that confirm what they already feel, and surrounding themselves with things that are just going to be like, oh yeah, so okay, we don't have to challenge this. This is what I feel. This is what's right. If it's not this, then it's wrong, and I'm going to find some way to make fun of it or pick it apart.
Yep, exactly. That confirmation bias is a plague on society. For sure. 100%.
We got to get rid of it. I wish there was a vaccine for confirmation bias.
Yeah, exactly. We'll put the confirmation bias vaccine in with the should vaccine, and then we'll be good to go.
Exactly. Boom, boom, eradicated. That's something that we can eradicate from society. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm so thankful, Jess. Thank you so much for taking some time and spending some time with me. Before we go, I would love to give you an opportunity to give us any parting words, and then also let us know what projects you're working on and where everyone can find you on social media.
Sure, absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for having me here. This was so much fun. I love your content. I love what you're doing. I'm totally for deconstructing neurodivergence. Let's break this shit down. As far as the projects that I have going on right now, I actually have a course for ADHD adults. It's called the Combo Meal Confidence Course for the ADHD and Autistic Combo Meal, which basically walks you through all the information you'll need to live confidently as your beautiful ADHD self. I go over things like meeting your support needs, understanding your values, radical self-acceptance, understanding trauma and how that sort of affects your thought process so you can start working through that. I talk about some boundaries and things, and there's also a exclusive Facebook group you can join and a monthly group coaching call so that you can connect with other students of the course in real time and sort of get advice from other ADHDers who've been there and even just come and commiserate with each other, because sometimes you just have to vent. You can find me on TikTok and on Instagram. My handle is Jess Diverges, J-E-S, 1-S. And my website is jessdiverges.com. And I also have a Patreon you can join, which is super fun. There's lots of benefits on there. Let's see. I think that's about it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jess, again, for stopping by. I can't wait to have you on future episodes of the podcast, as well as Jess is going to be joining us for the YouTube series Deconstructing Neurodivergence as well when that comes, which is coming soon. I know I keep saying it, but it is, you guys, it's coming soon. So thank you again so much. Once again, I want to thank you guys so much for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. Make sure you check out Jess on all of her socials. I'm leaving the links wherever you're listening or watching this. You're going to be able to find the links to all of her social media and her Patreon as well. If you haven't already, make sure you head over to my Patreon and become a member of the Soul Tribe. That's the way that you're going to be able to support me on a more consistent basis, as well as have access to patron exclusive content as well. Make sure you're following me at deconstructing.neuro on TikTok and Instagram. And if you still use the Twitter app, then I am at decon_neuro. I love you guys. Have a good one, and I'll catch you here next time.